Hello. In 1939, Germany and the Soviet Union bound themselves together with the Nazi-Soviet Pact, and Hitler then wanted the Soviet Union to take the next step. He invited the Russians to join the Axis alliance. That's why, in November 1940, Molotov, the Soviet foreign minister, was wined and dined by the Nazi hierarchy at a party in Berlin.
But just at that moment, when Molotov proposed the toast, some unexpected guests crashed the party. Britain's Royal Air Force. You remember history at school? Do you remember studying World War II? And do you remember being how it was? World War II was the UK and China versus Germany, Italy, Japan, Spain, and the Soviet Union?
No, not really.
Well, we'll be looking into that. It almost was. It would have been interesting when, particularly the Soviet Union on Germany's side. Yeah, this is November 1940, and Hitler is aiming to extend the what was called the Tripartite Pact, because it was Germany, Japan and Italy, and he was inviting the USSR to join them. And so, yeah, it was November 1940 was a really big month in this regard, because it's when the Tripartite Pact went from being three members to eight. So we tend to call it the Axis powers from that point, because it's obviously not the tri anymore.
No.
So, yeah, 4 years earlier, in November, on November 25th, 1936, the Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan signed the Anti-Comintern Pact, a sort of anti-communist agreement to stop the spread of communism. You can imagine from communist Soviet Union's point of view that now, 4 years later in 1940, they're being invited to join an anti-communist alliance. So, yeah, it was an interesting one. So the German foreign minister Ribbentrop invited the Soviet foreign minister Molotov to visit Berlin to hear this proposal. And this, of course, is 1940. This is a time when the USA was neutral. So it really would have been so loaded on Germany's side if USSR had gone in that direction. But to understand what tempted the USSR to join the Nazis in an unlikely alliance, perhaps, in November 1940, we need to look at the pact that they already had between Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union. Remember, in August 1939, Ribbentrop and Molotov had put together the Nazi-Soviet Pact. So the home of communism had already made this deal with their bitter fascist enemies in Germany. But that deal was coming under strain by the autumn of 1940. The Nazi-Soviet Pact had been about these two superpowers avoiding war with each other. And, of course, in that pact, they divided up Poland between them. But also at the heart of the pact was a trade relationship between the Soviet Union and Germany. And the USSR supplied Germany, was supplying Germany, still now in November 1940, with raw materials like oil and metals, which helped, obviously, in Germany's kind of conquering of Europe, its war machine. And German expertise used those materials to make machines that would make guns and shells and so on, as well as making tanks and ships. And some of that military hardware was traded back to the USSR. So the Soviet Union was saying, we'll give you the raw materials if you give some of it back to us in terms of
machines.
Yeah. Yeah, finished product.
Did they have a friendship sort of prior to this then?
No, quite well.
August. Very unlikely.
No, quite the opposite. Until August 1939, both countries' propaganda machines were saying how much they hated the other side and blaming everything on them. This is, of course, they're still neutral between each other. But then in August 1939, before war breaks out in Europe, they sign this Nazi-Soviet pact. So they have to completely backtrack on their propaganda and rewrite their recent kind of history, and the newspapers in both countries are direct. Directed to be nice to the other country now.
I suppose they both had the US as their common enemy.
Yes,
as well.
Exactly what happened. They both decided to point their propaganda against the US, and Britain actually probably got even more at that particular time, sort of standing as it was more geographically in Hitler's way, at least, than the US was. Yeah, so it was a very kind of interesting relationship they had. Germany supplying the USSR with things that would one day be used against Germany, and Russia was supplying Germany with raw materials like oil, which would one day literally fuel a German invasion of the Soviet Union. That doesn't come till 1941, and if Hitler's plan had worked here in November 1940, yeah, I don't know, you know, history could have been very, very different indeed. Yeah. Imagine a Nazi-Soviet war alliance, and it wasn't so far away. There were cracks appearing in that relationship by autumn 1940, and that is maybe why Ribbentrop invited Molotov to Berlin specifically at this time. Some of the supply of these raw materials and armaments has sort of dripped through recently. You could tell both sides wasn't really wanting to help out the other. They met in the middle of November, 12th of November in 1940 in Berlin. Ribbentrop as host. He liked to think of himself as the ultimate host and an outgoing kind of gregarious guy. He'd been ambassador in the UK before the war, and he didn't pull it off as far as the UK sort of established was concerned. They just thought he was a sort of boorish oaf, generally. But there he was trying to charm Molotov. Now, Molotov, you'll love his nickname. Molotov considered politeness a complete waste of time and waste of effort. He was a hard-nosed negotiator, and he had the nickname Stone Arse. If I'm allowed to say that on daytime radio.
Yeah, absolutely. I liked his name Molotov already, but Stone Arse.
Yeah, of course, our listeners may well know lots about him, but one thing that you'd probably know is the Molotov cocktail, the sort of homemade grenade, get some sort of flammable liquid in a bottle and a bit of rang in the top and light it and throw it. And that's what Finland had been fighting against the USSR in 1939 up to spring 1940, and that's where that they came up with that name.
I'm quite surprised, because being the foreign minister, Molotov, I would think he had some sort of charisma of some sort and not such a sort
I suppose it's, you know, in a democratic state you'd certainly have to have, but in and sometimes in non-democratic states like Ribbentrop had in Germany. But really the most important thing here is that you had to be liked by Stalin.
That's it. The prerequisite.
Yeah, and not killed by Stalin, because there's plenty of people he likes and then obviously later turns on. So if you've survived to 1940, you're probably relatively trusted.
So was Molotov charmed by... I'm getting Ribbentrop?
He had a poker face, you know, and so Ribbentrop was trying to give him this hard sell, really. Ribbentrop's proclaiming by November 1940, England's beaten, Germany is extraordinarily strong, the USA, of course, is out of it geographically and you know, is neutral, and the tripartite powers, Germany, Italy, Japan, they're not considering how they might possibly win the war. They're looking at rather how rapidly they can end the war that they'd already won. That was Ribbentrop's words. And then that Germany, Italy, Japan would divide up the French and British empires, and Ribbentrop says to Molotov, and the USSR should join them. Come and get a bit of the bounty. Molotov did ask one or two questions. He asked about Japan's new phrase that had been coming to prominence, the Greater East Asian Sphere, sometimes the co-prosperity spheres added to that. Obviously, Russia was concerned about the limits of geographical limits of where Japan might go in Asia, obviously bordering the Soviet Union. But Ribbentrop said he knew nothing about Japan's intentions there. But he did know that Japan was keen to achieve a broad understanding, he said, with the USSR. And that's one thing which would have appealed to Stalin, seeking to stay out of World War II. And he already had a neutrality sort of agreement with Japan after a brief border war a year or so earlier. So he was clearly, he had the opportunity to launch into a full war against Japan, but didn't take it and wouldn't take it until 1945. After the atomic bombs dropped. So Ribbentrop dangles the membership of the tripartite pact in front of Molotov. But then Molotov's taken to see Hitler. And so there in Hitler's vast office, it was more like a banqueting hall than an office. You know, it would take you, I don't know how long, to when you enter the door to actually get through and to Hitler's desk at the far end. And of course, Hitler didn't stand up at first. He would just wait for Molotov to come right up to the desk, finish off whatever he's writing, then stand up and greet him. And
wow.
This is after going past the parades of the SS officers, of course, and it all put on for show and intimidation just to get into the office. But then things began to turn in this meeting. Immediately, Molotov fired questions at Hitler. You don't fire questions at Hitler.
No,
but Molotov,
because he'll fire
did.
You.
Exactly. Yeah, he just kept firing questions about the origins of the Tripartite Pact, remembering it had begun in 1936 as an anti-communist alliance against the Soviet Union. So Molotov's asking Hitler, how could the Soviet Union fit into this? And also he asked, well, what about Southeast Europe, the Balkans area, the Black Sea? That's where the Soviet Union wanted land and influence around Bulgaria and so on. And Hitler was not wanting to make any commitments there. So Molotov just launched from one question to another. But when eventually Hitler did get to speak, Hitler focused on again, the French and British empires and dividing that up together with most of the rest of the world between Germany, Italy, Japan and the USSR. And the Nazi plan was that those four powers would each work southwards. So they had this idea that Germany, Italy, Japan and USSR won't get in each other's way if they go south, because obviously, you know, they're kind of, you know, east to west, generally speaking, of each other. So they would avoid a clash. Italy would get North and East Africa, where it was already involved in Abyssinia, today Ethiopia. Japan would get the China Seas and the whole Western Pacific, really. And Germany, who already had most of Europe, of course, would take Central Africa. And the USSR could push south to the Persian Gulf and Indian Ocean and you know, take over the British Empire in India.
Okay. Paul, can I ask, did Germany genuinely want Russia? Did they genuinely want USSR to join the pact? Because, well, you being a historian, and I do want to ask you this question, because yeah. I've also read somewhere that because in July, we're talking right now, November 1940.
Right.
But then in July 1940, so back 4 months ago, just weeks after the defeat of France, Hitler decided that Nazi Germany would actually launch an attack to USSR the following spring. So this is slap bang in the middle in November. So were they still planning that attack?
They were planning all the way through to attack the USSR.
They were trying to trick them then.
Yeah, I would say so. But there's always that possibility, though, that we don't know. If the USSR had joined in alliance with Germany, and Germany could have sort of defeated all of its other enemies first and then, you know, taken on the USSR, and it would have been a different ball game. As it was, when they end up invading the USSR, they've got Britain on one side of them. A few months later, the USA comes into the war. But there's always, we've also got to remember, although I don't think it's an overriding factor in this case, but all the time, today and in history, governments are planning military scenarios that don't happen. The vast, vast majority of them, they don't go through. And there may, even where it includes plans for being the aggressor at times. So we can't state as a fact, you know, but certainly he had names. Even when he wrote Mein Kampf in 1924, you know, he'd named the USSR as his sort of ultimate enemy.
I've read about a quarter of that book.
Done well. It's a hard read, isn't
I
it?
I know. I don't know why I was going through my phase of history. So.
Yeah, I decided when I was studying A-level history that I should read Mein Kampf. But,
did you read it?
I now advise my students your time will be so much better spent reading, because you could read about 10 other books in the same amount of time.
It's not even a readable book.
No.
I think it's kind of like squeezing toothpaste. You just read a little bit by little bit.
Yeah. Painful work. Yeah, so this was the deal put forward. Molotov, again, didn't give much away, but he said he would discuss it with Stalin, but there was still a stony atmosphere there. But that evening, the atmosphere between the German and Soviet delegations did become more convivial. A farewell reception for the Soviets held at the Soviet embassy in Berlin. And Russian produce like vodka and caviar, as you'd expect, was laid out in abundance. And Molotov proposed a toast to his German counterpart, Ribbentrop, the German foreign minister. But just at that moment, when Molotov proposed the toast, some unexpected guests crashed the party. Britain's Royal Air Force. The British had deliberately planned a raid on Berlin for that night, knowing Molotov was there, to press home to Molotov that Britain was still very much in the fight. And Churchill later joked that, though not invited to join in the discussion, I did not wish to be entirely left out of proceedings. So the air raid sirens in Berlin are wailing, and the two foreign ministers scurry into the air raid shelter, where Ribbentrop's repeated claims that the British were finished kind of echo to the backdrop of these RAF bombs pummeling Berlin. And Molotov was a realist, and Molotov and Stalin were very kind of cautious. So the reality of the situation wasn't lost on Molotov. Of course, there were a lot of kind of unanswered questions when he would take that deal back to Stalin, and the Soviet interests, such as the Black Sea and the Balkans. There were no commitments there from Nazi Germany. They couldn't be confident about getting what they wanted, and Japan was already making kind of military aggressive moves against Soviet interests on that side of the world. So that deal, you know, obviously never came off. But it's an interesting what if kind of question that you could have got the USSR joining Germany in war. But what did happen in November 1940? On the 20th of November, Hungary joined the Tripartite Pact, the Axis powers. Then on the 23rd of November, Romania signed the same deal. And on the 24th, Slovakia joined. And then in March 1941, Bulgaria and Yugoslavia joined. So it's still referred to as the Tripartite Pact, but by then it's got 8 members. But thankfully, not the USSR, otherwise the world might be a very different place, I'd guess, today.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for listening. You can get in touch on Facebook through the This Month in History page and through my webpage, poorletters.com, where you'll find my wartime novels and my World War II 75 Years On daily Twitter feed. Click subscribe on the podcast and get every episode automatically downloaded, all for free. And please write a review or give us a star rating. That makes iTunes bump us up their browsing pages. Thanks again for your support. We couldn't do this without it.